From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the great flood of July 4th, 2025.
We have children trapped in the water at Howdy's RV Park.
We do not have a mooring system.
The saying is we're in a perpetual state of drought, occasionally interrupted by flood.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the early morning hours of July 4th, the radio traffic at the Kerr County Emergency Dispatch began to get heavy.
Yes, ma'am. Just for your 43, the Guadalupe is starting to come up and Shoemaker is no longer passable at this time.
As a disaster began to unfold.
Com to Hunt, VFD, respond to 2029, Highway 39, 2029, Highway 39. It's going to be for a water rescue. House callers, house flooded. All the residents are on their houses.
Yes, ma'am. With the way the river's coming up, you may want to go ahead and tone out Ingram and have them clear by the river RV park down by Howdy's.
These radio calls capture the unfolding crisis of the severe flood in Central Texas, highlighting the rapid escalation of a catastrophe with the rising water levels.
10-4. Stand by. We're trying to get a hold of Special Ops Team for water rescues.
Fire call for the attention of Special Ops Team. Special Ops Team, respond to 2029 Highway 39, 2029 Highway 39 for a swift water rescue. Timeout is 3:43.
As well as urgent pleas for rescue.
Come to Mountain Home VFD. Mountain Home VFD, respond to the 100 block of Casa Bonita. 100 block Casa Bonita. Have a caller advising her house is flooded. Water's up to the window. She can't get any higher. She stated her house is now on fire.
10-4. There's no way we can get to them. Water's over the river, and we are all stuck.
These calls reveal and underscore the critical delay in issuing emergency alerts to residents despite early warnings and firefighters' request, leading to widespread devastation and an incredible number of fatalities.
Yes, ma'am. If you can get us a law enforcement officer down here, at least one or two, we're trying to keep people out of the water, but they're trying to go in on their own to get those children. We need some law enforcement down here now.
Ingram Fire en route to 101 Roland Lane, 101 Roland Lane. They're asking if anybody can head over to assist. We have children trapped in the water at Howdy's RV Park.
This also reveals a narrative that shows a lack of preparedness from local officials regarding the monitoring of the weather and communications with state agencies, ultimately showcasing the overwhelming impact of the flood on homes and on the community.
I mean, there's 38 inches of water in there, or water line, and it's truly just devastating.
We couldn't push the door open with all the water that just came within 5 minutes. And my neighbor up the hill helped my husband with a rope around his waist. He has Parkinson's.
It started coming through the door and rising inside. And when we looked out, there was nowhere to go.
The tally of the dead and missing is overwhelming. Over 100 lost their lives. At least 140 people are missing. Paul Flav with the Texas Newsroom investigates why wasn't an alert sounded.
In his first press conference Friday, hours after floodwaters swelled the Guadalupe River, Kerr County Judge Rob Kelly said unequivocally that the area did not have an emergency alert system.
We do not have a mooring system on the river.
Just days later on Tuesday, when Kerr County Sheriff Larry Latha was asked at what time mass warnings were issued, he said he didn't have the answer.
Sir, it's not that easy when you just push a button, okay? There's a lot more to that. And we've told you several times.
Did it happen, sir?
I can't tell you this time.
But the Texas Newsroom has learned that the county does have a mass alert system for public emergencies. It's called Code Red, and the county's had a contract for it since 2009. Company officials say Code Red can be used for flood alerts.
601 to Firecom.
Go ahead.
The morning of the flood, an unidentified volunteer firefighter asked that it be triggered around 4:22 a.m.
We still have water coming up. The Guadalupe Shoemaker sign is now underwater on Highway 39. Is there any way we can send a code red out to our Hunt residents asking them to find higher ground or stay home?
The response?
10-4, standby. We have to get that approved with our supervisor.
Meanwhile, the Guadalupe River had risen 25 feet in 45 minutes. An hour later, some local residents had received code red flood warnings, but others told the Texas Newsroom they didn't receive one until hours later, raising questions about why the messages residents received were so sporadic and inconsistent. John David Trollinger is the former Information Technology Director for Kerr County. He helped install the Code Red system. Trollinger describes it as a user-friendly system where you record or type in your message.
And then they hit the button, and then the phone calls, the emails, and the voicemails start going to every single phone number, every single email, every single text message is in the database.
Trollinger also provided the Texas Newsroom with hours of emergency radio communications he recorded in the early hours of the flood. He says he, his wife, and their families throughout the county received either no notification or nothing until 5 hours later, around 10 a.m. When asked Wednesday morning about the delay, Kerr County Sheriff Larry Latha said those answers would come later.
And I want that answer, and we're going to get that answer. And I know that's going to be asked over and over. Please understand that. You know, we're not running, we're not going to hide from anything. That's going to be checked into.
The sheriff and other county officials haven't yet answered our questions about their use of Code Red. The system, though, has its drawbacks. Code Red uses numbers from the white pages along with people who sign up, so it could exclude visitors and the unsubscribed. But it can use the federal FEMA-backed public system that issues loud alerts for anyone in a geographic area. In this case, it doesn't appear that feature was used. Trollinger, Kerr County's former IT director, says it's impossible to know whether a more expansive use of Code Red would have saved lives. But personally, he agonized over not seeing the alert on his phone that morning and even considered calling to request it.
I was afraid to even make one phone call myself personally into dispatch because someone might die because they didn't get through.
The county also long sought funding for public announcement sirens at low water crossing areas, but failed to ever obtain it. I'm Paul Flav in San Antonio.
On July 4th in Central Texas, along the Upper Guadalupe River, there was that flash flood that is the deadliest inland flood in the United States in the last 50 years. Right now we have over 120 confirmed dead. There's still over 160 people missing. I'm David Martin Davies, and with me is TPR's Vice President of News, Dan Katz. We're going to break down what happened and if this very high death toll could have been avoided. So Dan, what happened? What were the factors that went into making this disaster?
So the main contributor is the Guadalupe River and the speed of its rising. It jumped 26 feet in just 45 minutes in some spots, up to 29 feet near the town of Hunt. And that's just staggering. And remember, the day before, on July 3rd, the Guadalupe was just at 2 feet. And we've been in a long drought, and the river was very low, barely flowing. And it's just impossible to imagine that hours later, a wall of water would go rushing down, blasting campgrounds, RV parks, and communities and camps that were at max capacity because of the Independence Day holiday.
So that's another factor why this death toll is so high. There were so many people along the river, many of them not accustomed to its temperamental nature, and that's why they call this part of Texas Flash Flood Alley.
So we have that flash flood alley. We'll explain that, the human element of a lot of folks there, but we need to talk about the weather. And we'll get into the response. There was no mass early warning system like sirens in place. Now, after the flood, people are asking why.
There was this heavy rainstorm, this convective vortex, as they say. And that means there was no storm front that blew in that can be spotted from with weather satellites the days in advance. This was a mix of low pressure from the remnants of Hurricane Barry that came up from Mexico. It just sat on top of the Upper Guadalupe River Valley watershed, and it was being fed moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. It didn't go anywhere and just became this swirling rain dump.
That's right. It just stalled. It sat right over central Texas. And the rain, it wasn't just heavy. It was unbelievably concentrated, 5 to 11 inches fast. And with that kind of downpour on the specific landscape, while the impact is immediate, catastrophic, communities along the Guadalupe River were hardest hit in places like Camp Mystic near Hunt. Just awful stories there. 27 campers missing initially, and the camp director died after trying to save them.
We're going to be talking a lot about Kerr County. The county seat is Kerrville, right on the Guadalupe, and that's where the vast amount of disaster happened. Kerr County officials said on July 4th that they didn't know that this weather was coming, and they weren't prepared for it. Here is Kerr County Judge Rob Kelly.
We didn't know this flood was coming. Rest assured, no one knew this kind of flood was coming. We have floods all the time. This is the most dangerous river valley in the United States.
And we
deal with floods on a regular basis. When it rains, we get water. We had no reason to believe that this was going to be anything like what's happened here. None whatsoever.
So much rain over a concentrated area in Flash Flood Alley, a rare event, but not unprecedented, not unheard of. Some commentators have described this thing as unprecedented. They just don't understand the history. Similar or larger rainfall events have occurred before in central Texas. On October 17th, on 1998, 35 inches of rain fell in southeast of San Marcos. August 1978, 40 inches of rain fell in 52 hours at Medina. And on September 9th and 10th, 1952, 20 to 26 inches of fell over the Guadalupe and the Pernales watershed. And then there is that historic rainfall and flood on July 17th, 1987.
Helicopters pulled some of the teenagers from trees. Most of the victims hung on and reached safe ground, although one 16-year-old lost her grip and died hours later.
Buses stalled out and the water was so starting to, it was real deep, so we were going to try to get out and get to the road.
It's a clean golf.
Wasn't too far back, and it started washing people away.
All is saved. No, we just need help.
Well, we got help coming.
With promises of federal money, Governor George Bush tours New Braunfels' hardest-hit areas from the ground and in the air. He is asking for federal help in 20 Texas counties.
Oh, it's a terrible moment. God works in mysterious ways.
And there are so many parallels with that 1987 catastrophic flash flood. It also struck the Guadalupe River Basin in south-central Texas, particularly impacting Kerr County and the city of Kerrville. You know, some areas received up to 18 inches of rain in just a few hours, and the intense rainfall led to flash flooding along the Guadalupe River. 10 people died, and hundreds were rescued from rooftops and trees. And after that flood, there were promises of better preparedness and warning systems, but a mass public alert siren system was never adopted.
These are just a few of the reasons why this area is called Flash Flood Alley. This is a name that means something. It's a geography and geology makes it almost perfectly designed for flash floods.
So this was not a surprising event for anybody who study flash floods.
I spoke with Texas A&M civil and environmental engineer Nasir Garabi about that.
In a flash flood event, the terrain, the ground goes up and down at steep slopes, so the water flows at fast speed. The other thing is the weather systems, right? So in this flash flood alley, you get those short and intense storms. Also, the soil plays a factor. Like you have shallow soil, it doesn't absorb water that easily.
So this area is like a natural plumbing system built for speed and causing natural disasters. Then how does a flash flood compare in terms of how dangerous they are?
I asked Professor Garabi about that, and his answer is eye-opening.
Flash flooding is really the most lethal type of flooding. But generally speaking, nationwide, about 70%, 72% of fatalities in flood events happen in flash flood events. About 40% flash flood events that happened in Texas happen in this region. It's not a big region, as you know, out of Texas. It's about 30 counties.
And this isn't new. The Guadalupe River and the whole area has a deadly history. Just 3 weeks before the Guadalupe flood, 13 people died in floods here in San Antonio.
And this all amplifies the main question. Why wasn't something done? And we know it rains hard sometimes here, and this area is so deadly. It has a name, Flash Flood Alley. People had to know they were in harm's way once it started raining.
Unfortunately, that's just not the case. There have been studies looking at the level of awareness that people have about their flood risk, comparing Texans who live in Flash Flood Alley with Texans who don't. And they found basically people have the same level of awareness of risk in both groups. Essentially, people who live in Flash Flood Alley do not understand how volatile this area can be. And I spoke with an expert about that.
It's Carrie Stevens, and I am a professor at the University of Texas at Austin in organizational communication and technology.
Stevens has studied this in Texas and all over the world, and there is a comparison to tsunami warnings. Now people take them very seriously, and they know when they hear them to seek higher ground. That's the kind of mindset that the people in Flash Flood Alley might want to adopt. Stephen said this is all part of our complicated relationship with risk. It's easy to live in denial. It's hard to come up with a plan and then fund it for something that may or may not ever happen, at least not today.
People kind of know it's out there, but it's hard for people to know when to take action against risk. And you're exactly right. Tsunamis have been developed really well. And I did one project with some Japanese counterparts. And in Japan, they take them very seriously. And when they issue tsunami warnings, people don't question it. They get to higher ground because they know what the devastation is like. I think we're really in the early stages of trying to communicate the nature of flash flood risks to our public. We care about it in Texas. We're starting to do some of that work, but it's really only been seriously started in the last 5 years.
But having a warning system sounds like a great thing, but will people, visitors from out of town, even know what a siren means when it goes off at 2 a.m. on July 4th?
Well, that's right. There needs to be more than just sirens. There has to be education to back it up. Public service announcements, signs that explain the warning system, and how to react.
I think the warning situation is really complex. And this is something I've been thinking about with what's happening here. And that is that every county or geographic area, like a council of governments in some cases, they're the ones who are issuing these warnings. And it is very important for weather to be local and for warnings to be local. But the other challenge is that the county has to be able to afford it. And they have to allocate the funds to have the type of warning systems that they need to notify people. And so even if we're getting, I live in Austin, Texas, even if I'm getting a warning in Austin, Texas, it's quite possible that someone isn't getting a warning that lives in a different county or a different area that's served by a different warning system.
But here in Texas, we're also dealing with a culture that seems to embrace risk and certainly doesn't like to invest in public infrastructure.
And I think we have the added challenge in Texas that the saying is typically that we're in a perpetual state of drought, occasionally interrupted by flood. And so the fact that we have this need for water, yet when we get a lot of water in a short period of time, it's absolutely devastating. That's a hard type of risk for people to grasp.
Okay, so we know the area is dangerous, that it's historically prone to deadly flash floods. What about the warnings for this specific event in July of 2025? Were people told what was coming?
Well, the National Weather Service, they did issue alerts. There were predictions early in the week that there would be heavy rains. But on July 3rd, the day before, there was a flood watch issued. Rainfall predictions were from 1 to 3 inches, with some areas getting 5 to 7 inches.
Yeah, that was what we reported on the air at TPR the day before, but that doesn't sound like a prediction of a catastrophe, the catastrophe that it became.
Yeah, but later that day, the warnings did get stronger. Talk of very heavy rainfall and significant impacts.
Did it escalate further? I mean, what was the strongest warning that went out?
On the early morning hours of July 4th, the language got much more severe, talking about catastrophic flash flood impacts. And for specific areas like Hunt and Kerrville, they issued flash flood emergency messages. That is the top tier warning. It means to seek higher ground. All told, the National Weather Service put out 22 different alerts, getting progressively more urgent over July 3rd and 4th, eventually signaling maximum danger right now.
So why are people blaming the Weather Service, saying it didn't give warning?
Well, that might be the blame game, you know, after a disaster. The Kerr County officials who were supposed to be prepared for this flash flood, they didn't really respond to the warnings, and they're the ones who are critical of the National Weather Service. Here's Rick Spinrad, the former head of NOAA and the National Weather Service.
Weather Service did their job and did it according to standard practice and protocol in terms of getting out forecasts, getting watches and warnings out in sort of time frames that make sense, going back to Wednesday and then into Thursday.
And there is the fact that the National Weather Service was understaffed at the San Antonio, Austin, and San Angelo offices after the Trump administration's cutbacks. That didn't help. And I'm sure we'll be learning a lot more about this as investigations at the state and federal levels work their way through this information. And I'd like to see a focus on what can be done to keep this from happening again.
Yeah, Kerr County in Texas did not learn the lessons from the 1987 flood. We really do not want to repeat these mistakes again. Dan Katz, thanks so much.
Dave, you're welcome.
Over 2,100 people are taking part in the ongoing search in the Upper Guadalupe River after the July 4th weekend flash flood. The number of missing really jumps out. More than 160 are estimated to be unaccounted for, and that's where the efforts are right now, on the ground, scouring the 60-mile stretch of the river and the flood zones. A specialized crew from Mexico is assisting in that search. Texas Public Radio's Yvette Benavides has been reporting on that crew. So Yvette, what is this crew of bomberos? Now, I love that Mexican firefighters are called bomberos. So tell me about them.
So Dave, this is a 13-person crew composed of members from the Rescate Acuático de Protección Civil y Bomberos de Acuña, Coahuila, in coordination with Fundación 911. And they joined local Texas firefighters in the rescue efforts. They specialize in water rescues and recovery, so they have a lot of experience. I spoke with Ismael Aldaba. He's the president of Fundación 911. He said that even though the team has been to many other disasters, the situation on the ground in the Hill Country is beyond what he has seen before.
Oh, this is way different. This is the worst that we've seen.
So what did he mean by that, Ivan?
Well, it's not just one thing. These bomberos have seen so many awful scenes all over the world, but Aldaba told me that it's more than the conditions. It's really the scale of it all.
It's the devastation. It's the challenge for the search. We're pretty much looking for, you know, signs of life and cadavers in an area that people are still living here. You know, their houses are trying to get back on their feet. There's so much devastation. It's just amazing. It's sad, you know, and we try to obviously do the best we can to try to do our job out here, coordinating with Mountain Home Fire Department through their command and the guys from the state of Texas, police and so on, game wardens, DPS that are here. We're here to do a job. We're here to try to help the people from this area. And independently of where we come from and the time we're here. So
Yvette, I have to bring this up. There are tensions between the United States and Mexico, especially on social media. People say really awful things about Mexico all the time. So was that an issue for the crew?
Yeah, I've seen some of those comments on social media. It's so surprising that people can make those kinds of statements when these guys are here helping. Aldaba said that for them, it's not the situation that they've experienced in Kerr County. He says that they are being treated very well. Actually, he said they have been treated in excellent ways.
We're so happy with
it's heartwarming to be received this way. And it's just amazing, and it's incredible that all the outpour that we've had from the local communities, they're always like offering us food and making sure we have hydration and if we need anything. And I think that's really important. That's really, it's great. It gives us a lot of energy to continue to do what we're doing.
This is going to be a very long job trying to find all of the missing. And it's not clear how long they will be able to work on this scene.
Yes, that's going to be the challenge for us, the time frame, as we need to also, you know, continue with our protection to our city. But what we're seeing now is we're building the team a little bit with a deployment from Monterrey, Nuevo León, with their canine team. And then we have the state director of Nuevo León of emergency management coming as well. And we have another team from San Nicolás de los Garzas, Nuevo León. So we should be having 5 canine teams on the ground, which will make a difference with cadaver detection. So we're going to continue to work it until we can try to help as much as we can.
So how does this work? Do the crews, like the bomberos from Mexico, how do they fit into the overall search?
So they're working under the overall command structure. The search effort is highly organized to try to clear as many areas as fast as possible.
It's all under the command of Mountain Home, so they will sectorize the areas we need to start looking at. So it's going to be where they're working and where they have command, we'll be directing these dogs, and obviously any detection, we'll have our team right behind them with the our search and rescue guys, be it in the water, be it out of the water. So we'll see where we're at right at after the first couple of days.
And I ask Aldaba, what keeps him going, seeing all these disasters, earthquakes, and tsunami? What drives the team?
It's the satisfaction of being able to help, and the time that it's taken to build the team and build the experience and know how to do the work the best we can to provide a better result. So it's preparing with years of experience. It's preparing with years and years of training to be able to provide the best protection we can, and obviously the best result we can. Our teams are Swiftwater Rescue Techs. They're instructors. They're ground and search and rescue guys. We have guys that work under collapsed buildings. We have guys that have a lot of the cadaver detection. So there's just a lot of everything.
So Yvette, what was it like to talk to this guy?
Well, I have to tell you, I was very excited to talk to him. I've been following these guys on social media for a long time, not just this group, but other groups of volunteer bomberos from Mexico. And sometimes they work in coordination together at certain disaster sites in the United States. But this person, Ismael Aldaba from Fundación 911, I'm just so impressed with him. And, you know, I've seen him interviewed by other media outlets. I've seen him on social media quite a bit in recent days. And I'm just very impressed by his commitment to help people.
Yvette Benavides, thank you for this reporting.
You're welcome. Thanks, Dave.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. Special thanks to Paul Flav and the Texas Newsroom, as well as TPR's Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and TPR's Yvette Benavides. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. Find us wherever you get cool podcasts, and tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.